This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
When you're good to mama, mama's good to you.
I turn to you like a flower leading toward the sun. I turn to you, 'cause you're the only one.
And when I fall down, I have to pick myself back up. And when I fall down,
this is Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
Wow, that's a blast from the past, isn't it?
I may have played the wrong intro.
The retro edition of retro. Stand Up Straight.
Yeah, old school. We've gone old school, have we? Stand Up Straight, yes, this is who you're listening to. It's Michelle. Beck's in the studio. Hello, Beck.
Hi, Michelle.
And Clayton.
Look, let me just tell you.
No excuses.
No, I played the wrong intro here. On the weekend, two weekends ago now, I tagged Stand Up Straight in my Geeks Out show twice. You're listening to Stand Up Straight and no, you're not.
So, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And so. I'm glad we've infiltrated your brain.
Yep.
Yes, we permeated.
So you're listening to Geeks Out right now.
Geeks Out Straight.
No, I don't think that works.
I don't think that's a thing.
You're going well, Clayton?
It is going great.
You were giving us some samples of some extraordinary technology.
I found some very fun technology in a laser keyboard this week.
And for someone that does not enjoy technology at all, and perhaps Beck as well. I wouldn't know
technology if it hit me in the bum.
We don't talk about that technology yet, but we might.
That's the up late edition that of is. The Geek the Show.
Yeah, we need a nighttime time slot.
Yeah.
So big thanks to Beck for the news and her very interesting little conversation starter piece that was at the end of her bulletin. And
I've got many questions about that. Many questions.
I'll save those.
Mm. And for the Informer that you hear every Monday to Thursday from 6:30 to 7 o'clock. And as we kind of like to do at the beginning of our show, we do this. Get ready.
What have you done today to make you feel proud?
Ally of the Week on Stand Up Straight.
Clayton, actually, people really like my singing, so whatever.
Those one people. I'm going to go first this week.
Oh, what?
Because I have an Ally of the Week.
Okay, we love these.
Yes, my Ally of the Week is the AFL.
What? Clayton and sport and football.
Who, of course,
I'm literally speechless.
Have replaced their sign with a yes sign instead of saying AFL.
They had a huge, event yesterday where they had players and officials from the AFL. And it was a really huge thing for the AFL because they really copped a lot of flack about it. So I'm excited that Clayton talked about football.
That's one thing I'm excited about.
Well, we do need to let you know is that Michelle and I have been talking about this for a while and we decided not to tell you that I was going to say AFL.
I'm actually in shock.
Yeah.
I was like, Clayton's here. I can talk about football and annoy him.
So as somebody that's not really interested in sport at all,
no.
But why did you like that story so much, do you think?
Because it annoyed so many people. Yeah.
Can I tell you what my greatest phrase, if I never hear this again, it will be too soon. Sport and politics should not mix.
Don't bring your political views in.
I would actually, football.
I would officially like to say that same-sex marriage is not politics.
Well, that's
rights.
What I... Oh, you...
Well, I thought you'd finish.
Now. First you talk about football, then you tell my good material. I'm out.
I'm sorry.
Mic drop. But it's true. But this is where perhaps the no voters or the perhaps undecideds, this is where they find their ammunition for voting no. So in a sense, so they will find a way to turn anything positive into a negative, perhaps.
And my other big one is people who say, you shouldn't be forcing us to vote. I don't think Gillon McLachlan, the CEO of the AFL, is coming round to your house. Yeah. Like, them saying yes is not forcing you to do anything. You're still actually a free citizen. Mm-hmm. You might be a terrible one, but you're a free one.
And anybody that works for the AFL or the ANZ Bank or the NAB, or any organisation that's coming out in support of marriage equality, they were already in support of equality and inclusion and diversity anyway. So it is just, it's, what it's doing, I think, is just reinforcing what they have always, or in more recent times, felt. And I think what people are forgetting potentially is that all the employers and their families and all the employees and their families and friends know that they have the backing of who they work for, or who their dad or their mum or their child works for. This is about having happiness in people's lives and knowing that there is support out there. And I think this is what people miss.
And I think AFL is seen as one of the last great bastions of masculinity. And I think that by AFL backing a yes vote, it challenges people's masculinity. So I think that's why there's been so much of a reaction to it.
Yeah, it is, and there was pressure for them to come out, I think, unfairly, but, you know, but everyone has their time, I suppose. I'd like to just nominate somebody else. Gina, who is with Beck on Family Matters at 8 o'clock after this, has been going out with a group as of people putting up posters around where she lives, and she calls them her soccer moms, and they love it. They want to go out and put posters up and stickers and chat to everybody, and just wanted to acknowledge it. You can be a supporter of marriage equality in massive ways or in tiny little ways, you know. It's extraordinary. I wanted to just mention somebody. I worked at a phone room on Monday night up at Trades Hall, phoning potential voters. And a gentleman I spoke to is a retired lecturer. And I won't say, and he didn't say where his university was that he lectured. And I asked him, do you mind if I ask why you're voting yes? And he said, well, I was a lecturer in mental health, and I saw the effects, the negative impact on GLBTI people. And that was his reason for voting yes. And another guy said, do you mind if I ask why'd you vote yes? And he said, I don't know, it's just right. And he said, is that the right answer? And I said, no, there's no right or wrong answer. I'm just curious. He said, I don't know what the big deal is. Is it just right? And, you know, you got polar opposites. Mm. So it was, they're my two little individual allies.
If you vote yes, your answer is correct.
That's right.
So, there's a lot of stuff happening, and something really positive that I think is coming out of it, and I don't know if you guys have felt this, but you have people that have great pride in telling you, oh, I've posted my, do you find that too?
Oh, yeah, and all over social media, really, I think it's good.
And I think that people coming to me and saying, I've done it, I've got it, and I've posted it, and all that kind of stuff. So.
My colleagues are certainly telling me quite a bit about what they've experienced around the whole no thing. Mm. And voting yes. And I haven't heard anyone say anything negative for me at work at all, and they've all very much been promoting the yes thing amongst their friends. So thank you to my colleagues as well.
Yeah, I think it's really special. And getting acknowledgement, I walk around with a yes badge on, and having somebody make eye contact and give you a little bit of a smile, or, you know, that kind of thing. So it's really, really special. So there's lots of allies out there. You just know how to just go and walk past a cafe today, big giant yes on the window, and I asked them if I could take a photo with the group of the workers there, and they said yes.
That's the right answer.
This is the right answer.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes. You are listening to Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9 with Beck and Clayton and Michelle.
Hey, I'm Tom Bainbridge, and you're listening to Joy 94.9. It's Stand Up Straight, baby. Let's get up and about. Woo! Allies and stuff.
There you go, Clayton. Good old Tom.
Yes, are we? Yeah, cool. Yeah. There was something very abrupt. I don't know what I did wrong there.
You were just excited about the thought of Tom Bainbridge.
Yeah. Oh, he does get me quite excited.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anywho, we've got a studio.
Hopefully he's listening right now.
We've got a guest in the studio with us tonight who's probably looking at us thinking, what the hell have I walked into? And you're probably right. Rebecca Loveday is one of the hosts of Transmission, which is a, we'll get clarification, but I think an 11-part series that's on Joy's website, and it covers every aspect of the trans community and people associated with. So welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
Am I right? Is that 11 episodes, I think, or 12?
I'm just going to say yes.
You'll just say yes. Okay. Yes.
But you're right. It's a series that's created by trans people for trans people.
15 episodes. Yeah. I've just had a look. So, Rebecca, you're one of the hosts. How different is it interviewing to being interviewed?
I love interviewing. Mm. I actually find it really fun. I think the pressure's kind of taken off you when you know the people that are being interviewed are nervous, so therefore you don't have to seem nervous, and they're always going to be more nervous than you are. So it works out well. Mm. But now I'm in the reverse seat.
Are you nervous
are
right
you
now?
Nervous now?
No.
I always think that in any situation there's only enough nervousness to go around. Like when I go on a date, which does not happen enough, I always think like, oh, if I'm really nervous, then they'll be cool, or vice versa.
That's words of wisdom.
That's right.
So, Rebecca, we want to get to know you, and then also a bit about Transmission, which it was just launched this week, and it's a really vast array of guests and topics. But want to get to know you a little bit, you know, a potted history of where did you grow up, family, siblings, sure. That kind of thing.
Well, I grew up on the south coast of New South Wales, so I grew up in a pretty little town called Jervis Bay. Some people call it Jarvis Bay, but it's about 2.5 hours south of Sydney. Mm. My parents still live there. I went to school there. I've got two older brothers. I moved to Sydney when I was 16. I did a hairdressing apprenticeship, saw my first drag show, which kind of inspired me to a degree. Kind of just took it a little bit too far, maybe, some might say.
That's our quote for the night, yeah. I think.
and then I lived in London for a couple of years, and started my transition when I was in my late teens, not long after I moved to Sydney, and moved to London, had surgery, and then came back to Australia, and I reconnected with my family. I was a little bit distant from them for a short period of time. I was kind of being an angsty, what's the word? Teenager, but like in your 20s, but it's not a teenager, it's like a tweenager.
A young adult.
Being one of those, yeah. So being a young adult and being trans at the same time, you kind of rebel a little bit. And so then I came back to Australia and reconnected with my family, and that's it, I think.
So 16 you left?
Yeah.
Went to Sydney. Yeah. Was there a particular catalyst for leaving at that particular, because it's a fairly young age to
leave. Very young.
Yeah, so is there a particular incident or just a culmination of things?
I was getting in a lot of trouble at school. I was being a bit of a school rebel, and growing up in a small country beach town, I was doing things that not any of the other kids were doing. And
can you tell us what that, you know,
getting arrested for drink driving, getting tattoos without my parents knowing.
Gosh.
You're a rebel and a half.
Ooh. I was. At that age, I was. I think my parents kind of said to me at that point that you need to kind of knuckle down at school, or you need to do something else. And I was like, well, I want to do something else. So they're like, well, you have to do an apprenticeship. So back in those days, it's not that long ago, but back in those days, my dad's like, you need to do an apprenticeship. So I'm like, well, I'm not going to become, can I swear on the radio? No, I won't. I'm not going to become a mechanic, and I'm not going to become any of those things. So I'll become a hairdresser. So I started my hairdressing apprenticeship in Sydney, and that was where my journey kind of started. I guess my journey into womanhood and my transition and just growing up as an adult and standing on my own two feet.
So had you started the transition before you moved to Sydney when you were still living at home, or?
No, it was interesting. So when I started my apprenticeship, I went in as a boy and came out as a girl. So, yeah.
Were you dressing androgynously?
Very.
Or, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I was always a very pretty boy anyway, so. And I always had long hair and was always quite petite and angelic. So it wasn't really that hard for me to, chuck on some mascara and start to learn how to walk in heels, which wasn't very hard.
In high school, I'm imagining, maybe not, were you bullied a lot? In your, you know, sort of like that 12, 13 age, or were you pricey to stand up for yourself?
It was interesting. I think I had to change schools halfway through high school, and during the early years of school, I was picked on. I was very feminine, and I used to hang out with all the girls, and I used to get picked on in school. And then I changed schools, and I thought, well, I don't want this to happen again. So I decided to become, I guess, a little bit more stand up for myself and become a little bit more masculine. And I just kind of embraced being a boy, I guess, to a degree, and dating girls and all those fun things you do when you're pretending to be something you're not. And I just kind of rode with it to, well, I guess it was for my own safety more than anything else, and I was sick of being picked on. So so for the later part of school, I was embraced my adolescence as a boy, and then as soon as I left home, I guess I went back to my roots, my feminine roots.
Had you talked to your parents about transitioning before you went, or
no
was that
way.
Something that just kind of appeared to them when you came back from Sydney? How did it all happen with them?
So they didn't know anything about it initially. Well, they would have, because from when I was very young, they would have known. I was a very feminine child. I played with dolls. I refused to do boy things. I always wanted to be dressed up as Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz.
They think you were gay? Or had that discussion ever come up?
Well, they knew I wasn't straight in the sense of being a heterosexual male. But I don't think they quite knew. And my dad used to actually blame my mum quite a lot, because my mum in the 80s ate all the foods you eat when you're due to have a girl, because I've got two older brothers, so she really had to have a girl. So she ate mango or whatever it was in order to have a girl. And then I was born, and then I was really feminine. So my dad was like, this is your fault, kind of thing. So
too much mango.
Way too much mango. I don't even know if it's mango. I just made that up on the spot.
Sounds good though, doesn't it?
Just to be clear, was your dad joking around or?
No, he was being serious.
Okay.
My dad's a very stereotypical Australian bloke. He's very blokey. He is very much into football, and he was a butcher for years. Then he was a greenkeeper on a golf course, and he's a very manly man. And so for me to be effeminate was something that wasn't accepted.
What was your relationship like with him at all? Was it just you crossed each other in the corridor, or it was
kind
his,
of yeah,
was your dad school, or was it not much at all?
Well, because I've got two older brothers, my eldest brother was kind of taken under my dad's wing, I guess, in a sense, and he was kind of nurtured to be the scholar of the family, if you wish. And my middle brother's actually gay, so
what fruit did your mother eat? For him.
Coconut.
So then how do you have the conversation with your parents when you're in Sydney and you start this process? Did you ring them or what?
The first part was actually quite interesting. So when I first started transitioning, I was taking hormones, I started growing my hair out, I was allowed to transition through work, and it was all kind of very androgynous. And then when I would see my parents, I would detransition to see them. So I would wear like a baseball cap, or I'd like dress as a boy to see my parents, because I didn't know what they would think.
What does that do? What kind of attitudes and thoughts go through your mind as you're blossoming and you're becoming the person that you are, and then you've got to bang, go backwards? How does that affect you?
It's a bit of mental anguish. Like, it's not easy to be transitioning back and doing those things. And then I moved to London, so I got to escape that, having to do that. And I think in a way I might have blamed my parents to a degree, and therefore when I moved to London, I kind of distanced myself from talking to them so I could go through the whole process without the disruption of being told what I was doing was wrong.
Did you think that it would perhaps be easier for you to go away, change, I apologise if I'm not using the correct terminology, and then come back and then go and be Rebecca with them? Did you think that would have, was that going to be easy for them to understand rather than the transit, you know, a timeline?
I think so. Like, my dad's all for, if you're going to do something, do it properly type situation. So I was like, okay. Well, I'll do it properly. So, and my brother, my gay brother, he was already living in London, so I stayed with him, and he supported me. I had my surgery overseas.
And you were how old at that stage?
21.
Mm-hmm. So that's young in anyone's books.
Yeah.
How do you, so if you've had your brother there as support, was there support networks around you? Does the hospital or the doctors, or do they provide any kind of assistance or support, or what is there for someone at that age?
Well, you have to go through psychological evaluation to show that you're, I guess, competent to be able to go through with the surgery, that it's right for you. Mm. So I did that building up towards the surgery. But I actually lived with two nurses at the time. And
that's
they
handy.
They helped nurse me back to health, pretty much.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you cope with the people that think you this might be a phase, or oh, you don't really know what you want, you're too young, this kind of thing? Do you have anything with that?
Well, that happened a lot in the early days, especially with my parents and my family, thinking it was a phase, I'd grow out. Because I had gone through so many different stages throughout my life, like I was saying, how in my late teens I embraced my masculinity in a sense. So to do that and to be going back and forth and changing all the time, I think there's definitely a point where people just think it's another phase. But, you know, once you've had surgery, it's not really, you can't change back from that, really.
No phase.
Too much mango.
That's our other quote for the night. We have Rebecca Loveday in the studio with us. We're going to come back and chat to her a little further. You're listening to Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.
Thinking my damn, not thinking about you. Just walking my mind, walking my mind. With ya, 'cause we magnetize.
Yourself. Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9. You are with Michelle, Beck and Clayton in the studio. We also have Rebecca Loveday in the studio with us as well, one of the hosts of Transmission, which is a 15-part series that's on Joy currently. So if you go to the Joy website, you can watch it. And it's the most extraordinary cross-section of views and opinions and experiences, isn't it?
There is, definitely. It's you get to meet, I guess if you watch the series, you'll see a lot of different personalities, a lot of different journeys, a lot of different stories. It shows that the trans community is very diverse and that people, well, the trans and gender diverse community is very diverse. And I think it kind of beats down that, I get notion that people think that all trans people's stories or experiences are the same, which they're not. And it's a really interesting series, and it, you'll learn a lot about the trans community if people want to watch it.
Yeah,
I will watch it.
I think you should.
Oh.
you mentioned before we went to the song that you went to London, and you were there for how long?
So I lived in London for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I did the vast majority of my transition while living in London.
Was that a conscious decision? You thought, yes. I want to go overseas and do this here, or?
Well, it was a strategic decision because I knew that the British healthcare system would pay for the surgery for free. So because I'm a dual citizen, I had access to their healthcare system, which therefore meant that I would get a $30,000 surgery for free.
I would have done that too.
So yep.
And I get to go to Europe and I get to go and have fun and be a young teenager / 20s. Person just enjoying life, except for the bit where I was in bed for a week, but other than that it was fun.
Is there a sense of urgency or you want to hurry up?
It was for, yeah, it was for me. It was like the first thing on my bucket list of things to do, like going through the transitional period, like that was like number one for me, do the surgery.
So how long after you got there did you have the surgery?
So I moved there when I was 21. And then I was there for 2 or 3 years, and then I had the surgery. So I had to have the year's worth of psychological evaluation prior to be able to go through the surgery, and then it gets approved, and then you get booked into the hospital to go in for the surgery.
Do you feel angry or cross or frustrated in a way that you have to have a year's worth of psychological evaluation? I get that it has to be done, but it, from your personal, do you feel a bit invaded or do you know what I mean?
I guess I did it because I had to, not because I felt that I needed to. So I think they need to put it in place so in case people are going through it for the wrong reasons and potentially aren't doing it for the right reasons. But I guess in my case, I knew who I was, I knew how I felt, and I didn't really need to be evaluated to tell me how I felt and what I thought. But I knew it was part of the process and I had to do it to get to where I needed to be.
Are the people that you're dealing with in that year, are they relatable? Do you think that they connected with you, or did you connect with them, or did you feel it was just a laborious process you had to go through?
It was just a process.
Yeah.
It was definitely just a process. I mean, while I was there, I tried to milk the system and get some get some breast implants and get them chucked in for free, but that didn't quite go my way. I had to bypass Thailand on my way back to Australia.
Did you? I just wanted to backtrack quite a ways, but when you were little, do you remember sort of the very first feminine thing that you did? Was there anything that you had done that you thought, look, when you think back and think, that's kind of when I started to come out of?
I think probably one of the most distinctive things that I can remember about being a feminine child I had two brothers, and there wasn't an array of female things around my house, and specifically around me, because my parents would take them away so I couldn't access them anyway. But I had three female cousins, and one of them actually broke their Cabbage Patch doll, and its head was detached from its body, and she threw it out, and I took it out of the bin and I tied its head back on, and I've still got it to this day. So it was the Cabbage Patch doll that was rejected from society and rejected from the Cabbage Patch, and then I took it under my wing, and then I've still got it to this day. Yeah.
Is that how special? Well, you haven't thrown it out, so is that sort of that connection to where you were then, in a sense?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like if you look back on family photos, there's my mum, my dad, my brothers, me, and then this Cabbage Patch doll in every photo.
It's like, where's Wally? Spot the Cabbage Patch.
Where's the Cabbage Patch? And, yeah.
So with photographs around your family home, do they have any? In your parents?
Interesting you say that. So my boyfriend is actually coming to my hometown with me to my parents' place this coming weekend, actually.
Oh, wow.
And I know for a fact because I've mentally remembered everything in my parents' house, and I know that there's definitely two photos of me prior to transition to my parents' house, which I'll be talking to my mum about on the phone before we get there. So there's two, but there's, I would say the ratio of me as a female is much higher than...
Have they got both?
There is, and I respect that. Like, you know, I was my parents' child, and they have to, you know... In a sense, they lost a son and gained a daughter, but I have to respect the fact that you know, I'm not ashamed of my past. Mm. I don't need to hide it. And I can respect my parents as parents, that they want to have those in their house for memories of their child.
And what about with your brothers? Do they, how difficult or was it for them to, I don't know what other word, but to say adjust? I don't know if that's the right word. Accept or would adjust to the change in their sibling. What was that like?
I couldn't ask for better siblings, really. Like, my eldest brother, he's amazing. He's a school teacher. His wife's a teacher. They're about to have their first baby. They're extremely accepting. My middle brother, he's gay, so we're like two peas in the pod, really. So we can just hold hands marching down the street from Mardi Gras. And, but, yeah, my brother and I are very close. We have a very close relationship, my middle brother, being part of the same community, and we have a lot of mutual friends. And, yeah, they're very accepting. All of my family's very accepting. So they are now.
You're allies for each of you, really, in a sense, aren't you? For your gay brother. Do you ever allies played a big role in your life?
They definitely have, definitely, 100%. Interestingly enough, I have not been, I guess, strongly involved with the trans community until I moved to Melbourne. So I'm from Sydney originally, and during the time of when I started my transition, I was taught that you needed to blend into society, you need to be stealth, you need to be passing within the community as a female, and that's what was embedded in my brain. And for people to know anything trans about you is something that you don't want to be sharing that story with. So
who tells you that? Who teaches you that? Or is it just an...
It's just the way it was. It's just the way it was. And, you know, I transitioned 15, 16, 17 years ago, whatever it was. And during that time, there wasn't any... people to look up to. There wasn't any Laverne Cox that was advocating for the trans community. There wasn't anybody like that. The people, and especially in Australia, and there still isn't really in Australia, but there wasn't anybody like that. And people the term transgender wasn't even around at that time. People were called transsexuals. And people that were transsexuals were people like Carlotta, who was a showgirl that was used as, for lack of better words, it was a freak show to be, you know, to be the person on stage as a female that, you know, has extra body parts, and people would pay money to go and see it. That's what people knew, and also the sex industry, and then also porn, and that's all people knew, or people being ridiculed in films as the end of a joke. For me to transition and to have a life of normality, I got told to hide my transness. That's what I was taught to believe. And that was embedded for me from other people within the trans community.
Well, now Australia has you as a role model through the Transmissions TV series.
And they do. And actually, I've actually done a couple of other different things. I guess within the realms of media, I've done a short film. I've done two short films, and I've also played a part in a Netflix series called Deadly Women. So Deadly Women was an American-based series, and I was in an episode of that, and I was playing a trans murderess. Her name's Nicole Von Lee Titlow. And it's actually based on a true story, and this trans woman in Southern America, she killed her uncle with her auntie to pay for her surgery. Anyway, so I actually played the role of Nicole for an episode of Deadly Women. So I did that, and that was put onto Netflix. And then recently I've done two short films, and one of them was also based around a trans woman's experience with dating. And that's been entered into film festivals across the world, and also in Australia, so for queer film festivals. So keep your eyes out for that.
The celebrity.
I've done a few different little things. So it's... Yeah, it's been an exciting journey for me, and it's definitely nice to be on the other end of the scale that's now accepting and embracing who I am as a person.
There seems to be a lot more of the everyday person. It's not somebody that's a caricature or the butt of a joke or, you know, the villain, or and there just seems to be, you know, this normality. And I hate using that because, you know, there's a whole spectrum of normal, but I think that that seems to be the direction more so now.
I think, yeah, and I agree, and I've realized that I can use my experience, I can use my life, I can use my privilege as a trans person to advocate for other people, to be that person that people look up to be that person that young trans people can see.
Maybe we call you the Australian Janet Mock.
Can you do the rest of the show in American accent?
Sure.
Probably could. You're listening to Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9. You're on Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9. Clayton and Beck in the studio. We have Rebecca Loveday in the studio. And we're going to go a bit romantic, are we now?
I know. I always find a way to talk about love.
I'm going
to
throw in one question just before you do, because it's got quite non-romantic. What's the episode title of The Deadly Women that you're in?
Oh, it's called Gambling Lives Away, so it's season 9, episode 3.
Okay, thanks. I'm going to look, you go romantic.
Clayton's going to geek out now. Mm-hmm. I want to know all about your boyfriend. When did you meet him?
We met close to 2 years ago. And we dated for a short period of time, but I realized at the time when we first started dating that I wasn't quite ready to be in a committed relationship. I needed to do a little bit of self-discovery. And I also realized that I spent a lot of my 20s dating people, not being out as being trans, therefore not accepting myself as a person, and I needed to just stand on my own 2 feet and spend time by myself and learn to love myself and to accept myself. And even though at the time when I first met my partner, I knew that he was a good person. I knew that I was attracted to him, but I knew that I wasn't ready for it. Fast forward to 6 months down the track, we had a drunk night together, which was actually quite fun, and we've been together ever since. He's an amazing person. Even at that point, 6 months down the track, he still didn't know about my trans status.
All right.
I hadn't told him, and I had always been like that with the majority of guys that I had dated. It was rare, I think, out of all the people that I've dated, it would maybe be a handful of people that I actually opened up to and spoke to about my story. And it's interesting because people within the heterosexual community will say, you should be telling people from the start, you're being deceitful to this person. And it wasn't until, I guess over time that I realized, you know, that's my stuff. That's my story to share.
And when you're ready to.
And when I'm ready to share it, I will.
Because disclosure is a word that I hear used a lot, and I'm wondering at what point do you make that decision with whoever,
yep.
whether you decide to disclose, and not just a partner, but, you know, maybe potential employer or whatever, but, and in line with what you just said, it's, you know, it's your personal story, but at what point do you do that? And then that fear of, or what may or may not happen as a result of your disclosure.
You have to judge each circumstance differently. I think hopefully in an ideal world we'll get to a point where people won't blink twice if they know you're trans or not. Like it won't be, there'll be a point where people don't actually aren't even phased. I guess with people that identify as being gay or lesbian or bisexual, people aren't phased by that. They don't really think twice if they go, oh, like someone says gay, like, well, whatever, they don't even think about it. But if someone's trans, it's always like a big explosion of,
yeah, fireworks, know, of interest have to go off,
and things like that, and it shouldn't be like that. But it's definitely changing, and I'm lucky to have found someone that is open and is accepting of who I am, and it's amazing.
And was he completely from the moment you told him?
So I didn't tell him face to face.
Was your heart racing, bonkers, at your chest?
It was probably one of the, I would have to say, so with everything I've told you, my being open to my parents, coming out to them in my transition, having my surgery, going through self-acceptance, loneliness, all those types of things that you go through in the early stages of transition, in comparison to telling the person I was falling in love with about my status and knowing that historically the rejection that I had had, and it wasn't because I thought, oh, this might happen, it's because it had happened so many times before, to know that that could be the result of some of what you're about to explain to this person is terrifying. It's terrifying.
I feel nervous just thinking about it.
Yeah, because I don't know if I want to hear if it's sad or not.
Well, we're still together.
I was going to say, we know it ends.
I know,
well.
But I mean, you don't know what. So you don't have to go into specifics, but do you remember the first words that you said?
So I didn't actually say anything. I wrote him a letter. And the reason I wrote him a letter is because I knew that there was stigma. I knew that there was violence towards trans people. I knew that if I had got nervous and said the wrong words and said, you know, anything that seemed shocking to him, like sex change or something along those lines, that he might freak out. So I wanted to write a letter because then that way I could get down what I wanted to say, how I wanted to say it without any misconceptions. And on the flip side of that, even though I know he's not, wouldn't be a violent person, I knew that in the back of my mind, there's always a fear. And that's once again from historical experience of people being violent towards you because of your trans status. I was out of fear as well, that I was worried that if something went wrong, he didn't accept it, he didn't whatever, that I wasn't physically going to be present when that emotion erupted in him. So, yeah, so I gave him the letter. I went to his house and I said to him, I want to give you this letter and this might be the last time we see each other. It might not be. And he read the letter and he called me and he was upset. And
how long did it take you to write that letter?
I'm very spontaneous and I'm and I actually got home from work. I'm going to do it now. I'm going to do it today. I'm going to do it now. I literally wrote it then and there. And then I said to him, I'm coming to your house and giving you this letter. Because he knew that there was, I had given him a build-up to say, there's some stuff about me I need to share with you when I'm comfortable, blah, blah, blah. And so I was like, you know that stuff I need to share with you? I'm going to do it now.
Alert, so, alert. Yes.
I'm coming now. So, yeah, so I gave him the letter. I said that, you know, it might be the last time we speak to each other. He called me. He was upset. I thought he was upset because I had, you know, inverted brackets, deceived him, like I'd been told in the past by everybody else. He was upset because he said to me, it hurt him to know what I had to go through in my life to be where I am today.
To be
the person that I am. And yeah, so ever since then, we've been together and he constantly surprises me.
That's an extraordinary reaction. It's not just, I love you, I'll be there for you, but to say that he hurts for what you've gone through to get to that point.
For him to see it completely from my perspective and not his is the first and only time that's ever happened in my life. For them to not, you know, sometimes people might kind of be like, you know, that actually really upset me, you didn't tell me. I know it's hard for you, but that upset me, but he actually just saw it 100% from my perspective and how I felt and how hard it must have been for me, my journey, my experience. And yeah, he was accepting and we're still together today.
What kind of conversations do you have after that? Does he...
Well, I gave him like a hall pass in the sense of saying, if you have any questions at any time, just throw them at me. And you know, it wasn't just like he read the letter, he was accepting, that was it. I knew it would take time because I said to him, you know, people's mentality change when they know you're trans. People's ideas change when they know you're trans. And we were in a physical relationship and his physical attraction to me might change because he knew I was trans. And, you know, that just, you know, if someone's got the mentality of you're a man or you were born a boy or whatever it is, they're not going to be sexually attracted to you as a woman. But if someone's got the mentality of you're a woman regardless of what you've been through, then their sexuality or their sexual attraction to you is not going to change. So I knew that those types of things would take time.
Where do you think he got that sort of mindset? And that was it his upbringing? Do you know? Is it who he met or had in his social circle or anything like that?
He's got a really great family. He's got a really good family. He's just a good person. I'm just lucky, I guess. And to be honest, when I spoke about being a trans person of privilege, I'm a privilege in more ways than one. I'm of privilege in the sense that I pass in society. I'm of privilege in the sense that I am of middle class, I'm white and I'm working. I'm a privilege in the sense that I'm in a loving, accepting relationship. It's not like that for everybody. People that don't pass, people not necessarily because they have to, but sometimes, you know, even people that want to pass but don't. The violence that's put towards those people within society just for being who they are, people that can't get jobs, people that's family reject them, people that can't, you know, in a relationship sense, people that are violent and towards them. I know that the platform I stand on is very strong in the sense of privilege. So, it's important to recognize the people that don't have that, especially within the trans and gender diverse community. And the percentage of people that aren't privileged is a lot higher than the ones that are.
So you're going back to your family home and you're taking your partner?
Yes.
Is there a lot of intrepidation there?
It's interesting because my family is very loving, very accepting. My dad's the only person in my life that doesn't call me Rebecca. He calls me a nickname, that I had as a child. He doesn't call me my birth name. He calls me a nickname that I had as a child. And that's him being the breadwinner of the family. That's him being the head of the house, whatever you want to call it. that's him still having control over his family to some degree, and I accept that because I know that there's people that don't even let their children walk through the front door.
Correct, yeah.
So, pick your battles.
Pick your battles.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're listening to Michelle on Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9. She's my mum.
Beck and Clayton are in the studio with us. We have Rebecca Loveday that's joined us as well, one of the hosts of Transmission. We've had a message come in from Pete, loving the inspirational story tonight. Thank you, Pete.
Now, Rebecca, I was hoping you were still a hairdresser so you could fix my terrible roots, but I hear that's not the case.
No.
What are you doing with yourself these days?
So other than being the Netflix movie star that I am on the side.
Yeah.
I am part of the Sensewide Working Out program. So Working Out is an LGBTI job support service for people that identify within the LGBTI community that have barriers to employment. So that's what I do. That's my 9 to 5. And I'm also part of the Globe Committee as well. So Globe Melbourne. So I'm the diversity director of Globe. I'm actually their first trans person they've had on the committee in 25 years.
Wow. That's amazing. I love Globe. What a wonderful organisation.
We have a particular connection to Globe this year. Beck's been nominated for, as she called it, a Golden Globe.
That's what I kept telling people.
And at Globe, how much time would you have to put into your role with Globe?
Well, it's completely voluntary based, except for we have one admin staff that has a paid role. And it's interesting because our admin staff member is actually part of the trans and gender diverse community as well. And she's actually come through our Working Out program. So I referred her to be employed by Globe.
Oh, how fabulous.
So it's great. So, but for me myself, it's making sure I attend events and making sure I'm promoting diversity and inclusivity with Globe.
So with Working Out, are you mainly working with employers or people are looking for jobs, or you try and match them up?
I have a caseload of participants that I see on a daily basis. So I specialise in working with trans and gender diverse participants, and so they come in and I meet with them, and
That's brilliant.
It's lovely. Unfortunately, the sound of the music means we're nearly at the end of our show.
I know, how annoying.
It was distracting. Really, I was like, what am I talking about?
You soldiered on.
Why is there an army coming?
Yes. Rebecca, the fact that we're at the top of the hour and we still thought we had half an hour to go is an indicator of how engaging you are. You are an extraordinary, inspirational woman.
You are, and
you should do TV.
You should do.
Yeah.
Should I?
Yeah. Go on, just try it once.
Your face is too pretty for radio.
She's gorgeous.
Thank you.
What are you saying about the rest of us, Beck?
Thank you so much for joining us in the studio.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to call you our Australian Janet Mock, I think, because you are an inspiration, and you speak beautifully, present yourself beautifully. You're gorgeous. Thank you so much for joining us. Please have a look at the Joy website for Transmission. There are 15 extraordinary episodes. You've been listening with Michelle, Beck and Clayton to Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
Good night.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.